Welcome back to the couch, everybody. Welcome back to another NBA episode. I am joined at... Welcome back to the couch, everybody. Welcome into another NBA episode. I am joined by Max, as always, and we have a loaded episode for you today. We are going to talk about each conference final series, give you our predictions and analysis for what we think is going to happen. And then at the end of the episode, we're going to go into the Celtics and what we think they can do over this offseason after just a horrific end to their season with their best player suffering an Achilles injury and all of this second apron cap mess that they are in now. So we're going to go pretty in-depth into that after our series predictions. Max, how you feeling?
I look incredibly red right now. I just want to say it was like 90 degrees in North Carolina yesterday, and I sat out. I might have fallen asleep, or I definitely sat outside reading the Tiger Woods biography way too long, so I have an incredibly red face right now. So I'm not like hungover or in a 90-degree apartment. I just am sunburned. So putting that out there for the listeners, or I guess the viewers. But other than that, yeah, I'm ready to go. I don't know how long we're going to take on the predictions here. I think we're in agreement. So I'm excited to roll into those. Let's get into them.
I would think we're in agreement as well. Also, that's a good way to get sunburned. Tiger book. Sounds good.
Incredible. His dad might be the worst person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard.
Well, I can't tell, like, because Tiger's a billionaire and he's extremely successful. So it did work. What he did work for him. On the other hand, Tiger is definitely scarred with his relationships with women and like all that. So on the other hand, there's some shortcomings there for sure. So
yeah.
Fascinating read.
He's both the worst and the best dad at the same time. All right.
Yes.
With that said, we have Knicks versus Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't know if anybody would have predicted this even a month ago, both these teams being here. It felt like for a while it was just a crash course with Cleveland and Boston. Obviously, both those teams unraveling in their own unique ways. But Max, who do you have coming out of this Eastern Conference?
So I thought long about this one. I had an original pick like off the bat, and then I kind of gave it more thought, and I stuck with the original pick. But I think it's going to be a close series. I have the Pacers in six. What do you have?
I have Pacers in six as well.
Okay, great. So my reasoning for the Pacers in six, it's pretty simple. They have a like 10-man rotation that they run, and I just don't think that the Knicks are going to be able to hang around injury-wise and health-wise for what the Pacers can do to them. The Pacers play a very up-tempo style of basketball, and they are deep. The Knicks, however, they keep their lineups pretty tight, as we've seen. That's the big argument against Tibbs. And we're already seeing Cat struggle with his hand. I don't think Brunson is healthy. Like, I think he's just kind of got like a lingering whatever. He doesn't look 100%. He looks very good, but not quite 100%. And I just have some question marks about the health of OG and how healthy this Knicks team can stay. So to me, it comes down to the fact that the Pacers are just fresher, they're healthier, they're a little bit younger, and they've been here before. The Knicks have not been here before, and because of that, I'm going with the Pacers. But what are you seeing?
Yeah, well, first of all, Brunson's rolled that ankle five times, yeah, just
seriously,
in the playoffs. So
every other game.
That is definitely a factor. I think the depth is definitely a good point. I don't know if it's directly about injuries. I think that's a fair point to bring up, but I also think it's just important to have fresh legs coming in, just, you know, in the basketball game, in the rotation, and just having guys that are going to continuously be playing at 100% while the Knicks guys are running on fumes at the end of this game. I think we saw a lot of that in the OKC Denver series, where it's this really deep bench versus a bench that doesn't have any sort of versatility, and you got to play your starters like Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon, and Jokic are playing like 40 plus minutes, and those guys, you know, they get burnt out at some point. And I think that's definitely a fair thing to bring up. I also think that so far the Knicks have played two offenses that for the Pistons just weren't super talented and on par with the Knicks, and for the Celtics just played terrible and didn't, you know, that Celtics offense that we saw, again, I hate to take away from what the Knicks did, but it's like Porzingis was a shell of himself, right? Tatum and Brown just played bad. Brown was, you know, playing through a meniscus tear, didn't look like himself. Tatum, those first two games, just that's not what Jason Tatum looks like. That was not the Celtics team that we were expecting to see. So this Indy offense, I think, with their ball movement, with their spacing, with their pace, I think is going to start to show the flaws of the Knicks defense that we haven't really seen yet in this playoffs. Like, we were all expecting Boston to expose, Cat and Brunson. And to the Knicks' credit, both those guys were awesome, and Boston also self-combusted in some scenarios. So I think, Indiana's going to be able to spread those guys out. I think Halliburton's had a ton of success attacking bigs in space. I expect him to get Cat in those situations at some point. The Celtics didn't punish the Knicks small guys at all with their post-ups, really. Like, Porzingis
No.
couldn't score. They didn't really do a whole lot of post-ups with Tatum. Brown had a couple, but not really successfully. And it's like, if you post up now Siakam and Turner, I think there's a chance that goes differently for, Brunson and Deuce in those cross matches, in those switches. So I just think there are a couple more advantages for the Pacers offense to expose with that Knicks defense. Now, the Pacers defense has been good, but I do expect, like, Brunson to have a field day
Yeah.
going at Turner, right? Like Brunson's been unbelievable attacking bigs as well. So I think that'll be something you see. It also kind of comes down to the way that you're allowed to guard the Knicks now with Josh Hart, and how, like, you saw Kornet get 7 blocks in that game five because he's just roaming off of Hart. Like, you're gonna allow Turner to do that. So there's just a few specific advantages for the Pacers that I like more than the Knicks. But like you said, I think it's very competitive. I think it's very close. I'm not going to be surprised either way.
Absolutely. And I'm sure the Knicks are going to come back and make us look stupid as they did when we both took the Celtics. But exactly what you said, right? The Pistons, great story. It just wasn't their time. They weren't able to score. The Celtics, historically bad scoring, not to mention KP, just I don't even understand what happened to him. I expect Miles Turner to be obviously a huge part of this Pacers run here. And that's because Cat can't stay on the floor because of foul trouble. And I expect, Miles Turner to be able to draw a lot of fouls on Cat. And I'm interested to see if he can take his head out of the game here and stay on the floor, because that's what they need from him. And that's just been one of his biggest issues throughout his entire career. Now, the Knicks foul a lot. I think the Celtics also were getting a good whistle, but the Knicks were fouling very hard. The Pacers are just going to have more offensive possessions because of their pace of play, more opportunities for the Knicks to foul them. I'm very interested in seeing how the first game and the second game are officiated, because those games usually set the tone for the series. And if they're letting them play, then that's a good thing for the Knicks. But if they're calling it kind of tight, I mean, that's really going to affect the Knicks, because
Right.
we've seen them get into foul trouble before, and the Pacers are really good at exasperating that. Overall, I think this is going to be incredible series. I'm very excited for it. I don't feel strongly about our Pacers pick, but like I said, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They've been in big games before. They think they're the best team. They think they're the better team than the Knicks, certainly, and they think they're the best team in the league, which says something. I'm sure the Knicks do as well. Stylistically, I do have questions about Carlisle's late game management. We didn't get to see a lot of it because, well, I guess we got to see a good amount of it against Cleveland, but there's been some questionable moves during the regular season, in terms of like weird not calling timeouts and ATOs and things like that, in the final minutes. So I'm interested in seeing how, if they're able to clean that up. I have full belief in Carlisle as a coach to do that. But yeah, let's go to the next one. I think this one's pretty straightforward. Western Conference Finals here. We got Minnesota, led by Ant, taking on OKC with an incredible win last night. Why don't we talk about that game real quick? Have you ever seen a defensive masterclass like that?
That was absolutely amazing. They take Hartenstein off the floor, and they go with the 6'5" Alex Caruso on 7'2", 280, best player in the world, Jokic, and he literally denies him the ball the whole game. Like, Jokic could not get a touch. He got 9 shots up, and it's not just Caruso. Like, they're sending a ton of help on the backside too. But what Caruso did yesterday was absurd. I've never seen anything like it. And I mean, the Lakers kind of had that regular season game where they sort of showed the blueprint for, like, fronting him and stuff like that. But that was that Lakers game plan played to a T with Caruso
Absolutely.
and all the, swarming Thunder players.
Absolutely. I mean, I was just fascinated the way he's fronting him in the post, and it's Jokic. It's just the way that he's doing it. Jokic can't break off towards the rim, and it's just the versatility from Caruso, where he's normally you don't want to guess on screens, right? Like, normally you don't want to jump a screen just in case they slip and roll to the basket. He's jumping every screen, and he's making the right reads. He clearly knew everything the Nuggets were trying to do. And that's what happens in seven games when you're a very smart player. You kind of learn everything the other team's going to do. And that's why game sevens are freaking awesome. But I mean, what they were able to do defensively against Jokic, I'm pretty comfortable in saying I've never seen anything like that. And I think after that game, I think that the winner of that series, in my opinion, was probably the one that was going to go to the finals and probably win it all. I think my pick to win it all right now is the Thunder. I don't know if you meet another team that's going to cause as many defensive issues. I'm trying to think, like, Minnesota just doesn't scare me defensively like what Denver was doing, which is crazy to say that going into the playoffs, you would not have expected that. But what we saw from Denver in this seven game series, I don't think I'm trying to play it off the top of my head here. I'm not sure we're going to see a team that brings that type of defensive pressure against
Yeah,
SGA and OKC.
I would disagree with that. I mean, I think this series is going to be gross. I think it's going to be really low scoring. I think Minnesota's defense is going to do, similar stuff to what the Nuggets were doing in terms of packing the paint, in terms of daring other guys to beat them, other than Shea. With this series, it's like, I don't think Minnesota's going to be able to score.
Yeah.
So I really just think both defenses are going to really like win over the opposing offenses, and it's going to be gross. But yeah, I am kind of with you. Like, the winner of that series was going to be my pick to win the finals too. And I would say, like, I have OKC in six here. Again, I think it's going to be gross, but I do think they have, Shea on their side. They have all this depth. I do think they're going to be able to force Minnesota into some turnovers. I think they'll be able to get out in transition, and just show their talent advantage over this Minnesota team, which does also have a lot of talent. I mean, we've talked about them a lot. I don't think anyone's surprised that they're here. Edwards is playing great. He's, made a pretty significant playmaking jump compared to where he was last season. I think Randle's been excellent, but it does kind of come back
Hold on,
to
hold on.
like
Randall's been better than excellent. Randall has been like he's been
better than
awesome.
excellent. I was complimenting him and it wasn't enough.
Well, yeah, he's no, we got to give him some flowers. He has legitimately taken an extra step and made us eat our words on this trade, I think. Like what he's doing and what he's bringing offensively to this Timberwolves team is really one of the bigger reasons that they're here because the rest of this team has not been shooting the ball well at all. I know later on, when after Curry went out, they kind of had some better offensive games, but I still don't trust that team offensively as much, especially if Randle is playing poorly. Now that he's playing really well, I think they have a bigger shot or a better shot against OKC. I'm still picking OKC in six as well. But I think Randle is a huge, like, shout out to him. I'm fascinated with how they play him this series because I mean he's gonna be. You know where he's going to get to his spots. That's what he's elite at doing. And really, it's just about if he can get it to go. I think OKC is equipped better than anyone else to guard him effectively.
Right.
But like you said, I agree. I think it's going to be a very messy series, very gross. I feel comfortable in my Thunder pick, though.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it kind of comes down to like both of these teams have a shooting issue. Jaden McDaniels has had some really good games, but he's just not consistent as a shooter right now. Randle, as much praise as we want to give him, is only at 34% for the playoffs from three, and obviously Gobert is just a complete non-threat. And actually, like, I'm really interested to see what happens with Gobert here because the way that the Thunder defend and the way that they get deflections and, lead the league in steals, they had 16 steals versus the Nuggets yesterday. It feels to me like if the ball goes near Gobert, with how bad his hands are, with how bad his overall offensive game is, it feels like a turnover. And I'm
I mean,
like,
they were poking it from Jokic, who has arguably the best hands in the league. And
right.
every time he got the ball, he's getting swarmed and it's getting poked out from. So Gobert, a guy who literally can't catch a ball that's like handed to him. I mean, you can't catch DHOs. Like, I'm not sure. I agree with you. I'm not sure this is going to be
Yeah.
pretty.
I don't think, obviously, they're not going to feed him like Denver's feeding Jokic, and they're not going to
Yeah,
give Rudy
absolutely.
that type of attention. But it's like, as soon as Rudy puts the ball on the ground on like the short roll or something, like if they just blitz Ant and force Rudy to make a play in the roll, like
Not
I
happening.
feel like it's a turnover. I know that's an
Yeah.
exaggeration. It's not a turnover every time, but it's just like it could get ugly with forcing Minnesota to turn the ball over. And we'll see, like, if Rudy's offense is that bad and you can't put him on the floor, then all of a sudden your defense takes a big hit. Obviously, that's the luxury of Minnesota, is they do have Naz Reid and they have all these different lineups they can go to. So it does get interesting. I don't think it's, super clear cut. I would be surprised if Minnesota won, but I wouldn't be like, how in the world did they do this? Like, the route for them to do it is to play amazing defense, for OKC shooters to not make shots like we saw in a bunch of those games, and to win by, getting out in transition and using OKC's own, game plan against them and giving them a taste of their own medicine in that way. And then obviously, you need the regular stuff from Ant and Julius to carry the offense. But there is,
If
a path for Minnesota.
well, if you're relying on the shooting variance of Alex Caruso and Lue Dort and Kayson Wallace and Isaiah Joe versus the shooting variance of like Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Jaden McDaniels and Mike Conley, I think I'm going with what OKC has to offer because those guys have been a lot more consistent as shooters and it's a lot more out of the norm the way that they're shooting the ball compared to those guys from Minnesota, where those guys are always have always been up and down shooters for the last, couple seasons here. Like McDaniels, when you get anything from him offensively, it's usually a plus here because he's just never really had that consistent jump shot. When he's on and he looks good, like he's unstoppable, really, and he's such a good player. And really, you have him out there for defense, and if he can hit threes, that's what you're looking for. But there's always been variance with him offensively, and Mike Conley's just probably at this age now where he's just not going to be able to contribute offensively as much as he was before. So,
Yeah,
and
I do want
Nickeil hasn't been able to hit a shot in a
to. Yeah,
while,
I do want to talk about the shooting variance though with OKC, because Jalen Williams is at 25% from three. Lue Dort is at 28%. Like, that is insane. Caruso's shooting it well. Shea's obviously Shea. Like, Chet's not shooting well. Let me see what Chet's at. I'll pull it up. I have it right here.
Well, if
Chet's at 32%. Like, these guys
yeah.
aren't shooting well.
But the way they're having to defend, like you almost wonder if it's, I definitely think it's affecting their legs for their shots, and that's why they're not shooting the ball well. And let's just face it, like as good as Ant is and as good as this Minnesota team is, they're also slumping at the right time. You're not going to necessarily have to, I'm not sure you're going to have to do the defensive gymnastics that you had to do against that Denver team. Maybe that allows for their have a little bit more energy in their legs. Maybe they start shooting the ball a little bit better.
That's
Because
fair.
that is against the
Dort
norm for
was
those
at
guys.
40% during the season, and J Dub was obviously higher than 25. I don't know what he
Oh,
was at, but
absolutely.
mid 30s. So yeah, but like, if this is a, Minnesota, like, what Minnesota has to do is really take care of the ball. And even if they're not, scoring at a super high rate, is you keep OKC out of transition and you gotta win a half court execution battle, because you can't. If you turn the ball over, or if you let them get out in transition, you have no chance. So we'll
Absolutely.
see, like, can Minnesota, can, Ant and Julius and, Naz Reid and all their good offensive players, can they make good decisions with the ball and get decent looks? That's
And
the
Dante's going to be
question.
huge. We haven't mentioned him yet, but Dante DiVincenzo is going to be huge in this series for Minnesota. He matches up so nicely on the opposite side of what OKC is doing. They're going to need him to be effective in this series. And to me, I mean, Ant complained earlier in the season about getting double teamed. I can't wait to see his reaction to this OKC defense, because it's going to be a lot worse than double teaming, man. They're going to be selling out on him. And I would imagine, obviously, they're very good at rotations, defensively, but I would imagine they're going to be okay with a few guys on that floor taking some open shots here, as long as they sell out on Ant. So I'm interested in seeing how Ant's playmaking is in this game, because this is a huge turning point for him in his series in his career as a basketball player. This is where you start to begin to level up here, and if he can take that step and become the superstar that we all expect him to become, it's going to be huge, and it's definitely going to help Minnesota. So
Yeah, I
I
think you can
thought
say the
also.
same thing, like, at a lesser extent, for the guys who are the recipients of the playmaking. Can Jaden McDaniels step up and attack those closeouts, and score effectively? Can he knock down enough open shots? Can Randle, take his one-on-one matchup and win it? I think, that all that stuff is really important. What were you going to say, though?
Well, also speaking of, Ant leveling up, I felt like OKC kind of checked something off a box here for me, where I've been on this podcast a lot saying I'm not sure if they should be the favorites, or I'm not sure how deep they're going to go because they haven't had those playoff experiences. And I can comfortably say that that series against Denver, going to seven and pulling it out and getting that win, that put some, playoff hair on your chest, if you will. Like that made them, a little bit bigger in my eyes. That's one of those, bruises and beatings that you have to take to get better. And it's, what teams that have won the championship every year have had to go through. Like Denver themselves had to go through it, and the Celtics had to go through it, and the Bucks and whoever every year. Honestly, other than really the Raptors, but you can argue the Raptors were really solid and had gone through those playoff bumps before, and then Kawhi was just so good that they kind of put him over the edge. But I mean, Kawhi had been through those bumps on his own end. So either way, just I was really impressed with OKC coming out of that series. I think I'm viewing them in a new light now after that win.
Yeah, 100%. I still think they're, like we mentioned, their half court offense can really bog down and it can get really ugly if those shots don't go in. But in terms of like the process, in terms of ball movement and shot selection and decision making, like that stuff seems to be at a really high level, at a easily high enough level to win the championship. At some point, it kind of comes down to like, shooting variance, like we talked about, and just getting a couple more. Like they could have traded for Cam Johnson this year. Getting a couple more shooters and scorers on that roster would really put them over the top. But they definitely have enough here and have shown us
Well,
enough winning games 4 and 5, right? In those clutch
yes.
situations where it's like, okay, they're not like totally out of their depth when it gets into these really high leverage moments.
Well, they can also just trade for Giannis. I know that's so unrelated, but they can literally just trade for Giannis or Booker or whoever they need to trade for. Like they just have the assets for it. It's they're so scary, and I think, with these teams that are in the finals now or the conference finals now, right? These are all teams that haven't won a final. Some of them haven't ever won a championship. Most of them haven't won in a very, very long time, and. With the second apron, right, it makes it harder for teams to move and create these mega teams like we were used to. And it, people say it's not a hard cap. It's a fucking hard cap. Like what? Like we're gonna get into it more in this next segment. Finding trades for these teams or for these players when you're signing homegrown talent to expensive contracts and you still are getting effectively getting in trouble for signing them to those contracts because they're still so expensive, and now you can't do anything when you did nothing wrong. You drafted your player, you brought him in, and you built him up, and he was a good player. You made the right pick, and it's still he's going to be extremely expensive, and it's going to affect your team. Now, where I was going with this is basically we're seeing a lot more parity, and I don't know, it hasn't happened enough yet where we can officially say like the second apron is going to lead to a new team winning the series every single year, and it's going to be the healthiest team wins it every single year, whatever. But I think the last team that can feasibly be a potential dynasty would be the Thunder. Now, I know I'm saying that way too early before they've even won a title, but if you look at their pieces in terms of age and in terms of what they have coming in the future with assets, they are in prime position to be a contender every single year for the next, 5+ years. So while I don't think there are a lot of other opportunities for that, maybe in San Antonio with what they're building. I think it's San Antonio and OKC right now. I'm not sure who else off the top could really qualify for potential dynasty like
San
that.
Antonio also on Giannis watch. Would Devin Booker
Sure.
be like the most perfect fit in OKC, do you think? Would that be the we're
Yeah.
gonna win three
Just
straight now?
Devin Booker. Like, oh, we'll upgrade the J Dub spot with Devin Booker. Like, oh, cool. Fuck.
Plop that on.
Great. So yes, Suns, you traded all your firsts. Well, I can just give you, 10. It's fine.
Want 5 firsts and J Dub for Booker? That's
Like,
gonna make us
but
a
like seriously though, I mean,
repeat.
J-Dub, he played well last night, but he's struggled throughout the playoffs. He's kind of slumped here and there throughout the playoffs. I mean, if you're, I'm not, I'm. It feels like I'm always trying to trade off J-Dub, but to me, it's like you literally just trade Booker, J-Dub for Booker, and it's like
They
such a perfect
that's
fit.
the thing is like they are probably going to win with this version of J Dub, and it's like, first of all, what if J Dub just develops the way that they want him to? Or second of all, what if they just make the crazy trade and then they're even better, after coming off a championship? Anyways, you want to get into this Celtics mess?
Yes, let's get into it. Okay, so Jordan and I were tasked, we tasked ourselves with trying to figure out this Celtics situation because I'll be honest with you. Well, actually, I want to hear from you first. How do you feel right now about the next couple years as like as a Celtics fan, if you will?
Okay. I feel I will answer that by saying I feel more optimistic than I think most fans do. But I will also say the Tatum Achilles injury was much more detrimental than I realized in the moment because it sped everything up by a full season. If Tatum doesn't hurt his Achilles, we can still look at that roster and we can say KP had some weird illness. Jaylen was playing through this meniscus tear. Drew didn't shoot it well. Tatum had a wrist thing, and we just self-imploded against the Knicks. You know what? Let's run it back. Let's front the bill. We'll pay the $550 million with our new owner, and we will be a top-tier contender again next season with Drew, with KP, even at their ages, with Al, even at his age. And now that Tatum misses likely all of next season, it's like obviously they're not contending next season. And then you just think to the season after that is Drew going to be at the level that you need for a championship starter. Horford probably not even going to be close to that level, right? So it just changes a whole lot when you lose that year next year. Now there are moves out there. Like I went through a lot of stuff today where there are, good players available, and I think Drew will fetch us something on the open market if we try to go that route. But yeah, it just like it stinks that we lose basically a full year of contention with this roster.
So I feel more optimistic after looking through this, which is weird because I don't think we actually found any trades that are like really plausible that actually
No, I
help
will
us out.
preface this by saying, don't get your hopes up for like some blockbuster awesome trade where you hear us say it and you go, oh my God, that's the one. Like it's not out there because it's the
It's not.
second apron, like Max said, this offseason is about getting under the apron and also retooling for the 26-27 season when Tatum returns.
But I'll preface. I'm going to say this. The more I've thought about this, and maybe I'm just coping, I do think it's sort of it's like a blessing in disguise. And I don't want to call it a blessing in disguise, but you know what I'm saying. I do think that there is some positivity that can come out of this. And we called this team, a potential dynasty. Obviously, we were not. However, if you look at what happened in Golden State, who I'm going to rely heavily on, they had a really solid team, probably one of. That's an understatement. They had an elite team, probably one of the best teams ever assembled. Kevin Durant tears his Achilles, and they have to retinker on the fly for the next few years. Then they end up in a finals again where they beat the Celtics and win another championship.
Well, I'll add to that. What you missed there was Steph missed a year in there. I think he missed
Absolutely.
the what 2020 season
21.
or 21 season, whatever it was,
21. I think it
and
was
they end up with
21.
a really high lottery pick. And they whiffed on the pick, and they
Yes.
still got back to the championship and won it.
Yes. And I was going to, yes. So I'm glad you said that part. This is the opportunity for us to retool in a way that needs to happen. The assets that we have paid for are aging out. Like we paid for them because it was the cost of winning that championship. It was the cost of doing business to sign Derek White and Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis to the contracts that we signed them to. But that being said, I mean, Drew Holiday is he's up there in age. KP can never stay healthy and is up there in age. And it's going to be time where we're going to be having two timelines going on if we are to do like sort of this rebuilding thing with them there. I think this gives us the opportunity to sort of take a year off, rebuild, reset, more importantly, get some money back on the books. And instead of us being in, cap hell, potentially. Figuring some stuff out and getting back to a point where we can perennially contend based off of, making correct picks, making correct trades, and being financially smart. And those are all things that Brad Stevens has shown he has been, throughout his tenure as the GM of the Celtics. So I do think this is something that kind of allows for us, to take a year where we don't play Jaylen Brown consistently, right? Where we let him take days off and we let him rest and rehab the meniscus tear. Obviously, Tatum. The whole thing with Tatum is we need him to come back and be Tatum.
Yep.
And I don't know if we'll ever get him. I think our, that would be incredible if we did. More realistically, you're probably getting 95 to 90% of what Jason Tatum was. That's just a fact of the matter with Achilles injuries. Hopefully he rehabs correctly. I know he will. It sounds like from everything that we've heard with all the research, like the fact that he tore it in New York City, he didn't have to fly, so it didn't swell. He was able to get surgery that night or the night later, before whoever And he did the surgery by this with the same person that did Kevin Durant's surgery, I believe. And he had done a surgery on Derek White that was very successful. So it's a world-renowned surgeon. He didn't have to fly to him because he tore it in New York City. It seems like there was a lot of really good things, and it seems like a lot of people tear their Achilles and don't get into surgery as quickly as Tatum did, which is, so that might affect his health and everything. I don't want to see Tatum next year. I want him sitting out as long as humanly possible. And playing, coming back for next year, because I think the more rehab and the more rest, then that's the more important. And I don't see why we would try and even be good next year. If I'm us, I'm thinking we take the year off, we try and, sell some parts, retool, retinker, and get ready for the next year. But after that spiel, let's take a quick break and we'll actually get into the trades themselves.
All right, we're back. We're going to dive into some of these trades. I basically came up with a bunch of trades for Drew, for Porzingis, and for Sam Hauser. Those are the three contracts that you would think the Celtics are going to be looking to move this offseason. Maybe they don't move all three. Maybe they only move two. Maybe they only move one. I think it's pretty likely that they move at least two, maybe three, and just get under this apron and give themselves flexibility. But Max, I will give you my first trade for Drew Holiday. I want to talk about it first from the Boston perspective. So tell me if you would do this if you were the Celtics. We send Drew and our 2026 first round pick to Dallas. Okay. They send us back Gafford and Jaden Hardy. And then for the contracts to work, Dallas would also have to send out Klay Thompson and to the Brooklyn Nets. And then I think each team would probably have to send a second rounder to Brooklyn just to, reward them for taking on that Klay contract. Maybe only one team has to send a second. But basically, the deal is Drew to Dallas, Gafford and Hardy to Boston, Klay to Brooklyn. Does Boston do this deal?
It when if they trade Drew, it's going to be a deal like this where, I mean, Hardy, we like him, right? He plays really hard, not any playoff of his last name, but and then Gafford, we do like. I think the problem with this one is Gafford isn't expiring, and I do like having an expiring on the books, but he is looking to to sign something big this year. And that's where it gets kind of murky for me because he's been kind of vocal about wanting to get paid a lot of money here. That's just something that you're not going to get from Boston right now. So I do like the trade. I think if you are Dallas, this is exactly the type of person you're wanting to bring in is Drew Holiday. You need a point guard right now because Kyrie also tore his Achilles and is going to be out for a while. So you absolutely want someone like Drew Holiday in the building. I do think this trade absolutely makes sense for Dallas. As for the Celtics, I do like the trade. I'm a little worried on the Gafford aspect of it. I like
Okay,
your
let me
other
change
trade
it. If
here.
it's lively, is it a absolutely yes?
Yes.
Okay. I agree. I would do this either way. I think I get what you're saying with the Gafford expiring. I think Boston would be the perfect place for him. A guy who's that valuable, a guy who wants to be on a contender, to, re-sign with Boston after that expiring contract and Tatum coming back. I think that would be a great fit. The thing here is like sending that, 2026 first to Dallas could be a really valuable pick. But I think it's worth it to get a guy like Daniel Gafford and to kind of retool that roster to get ready for Tatum's return.
I don't love the first either. I agree with you on that one. That's where it gets a little iffy. Like, say Tatum comes back and he's just not the same, and the moves they made were like kind of, around the corners to bring in really solid role players, and it just doesn't work out. And then you look up and you don't have your first that year. I think that's where it gets a little tough.
Yeah.
So I agree, but in theory, I do like this trade. I prefer the Lively one. I just don't think Dallas gives up Lively
Right.
unless they do
Well,
give up Lively to bring in Gafford to pay Gafford.
right. And maybe you have to throw in another pick if it's lively, but if we even tweak it more and say, maybe with Gafford, with Lively, with Cooper Flagg now, with AD, maybe Brad can convince them, like, you don't need all these guys. Like, I'm not giving you all that much for Gafford. And maybe it's Drew in a couple seconds or something like that. So maybe you don't have to give up a super valuable first. Maybe it's a first, later on. That's not the 2026 first. But I think regardless, I would do this deal and get Gafford in the building and get ready for that 2027 season. But let's go to the next one.
This, well, real quick, the moves that are going to happen with Drew Holiday are just not going to move me unless you're either getting a player that we really like back or you're saving money. And I
I
think on
mean, I
this
do
one,
really like Gafford.
I really like Gafford. I like Lively more than Gafford. I do like Gafford though. But I don't know. Like, I'm picturing him under the Joe Mazzulla scheme, and it just doesn't fit as well as you would think for someone as good as
Yeah.
Gafford. I don't see him. I just don't see Joe playing him because of his lack of ability to space the floor. I mean, obviously, Kata has played and Cornette has played before, but those guys are slightly better spacers. And no, they're not. But you know what I'm saying. Like, they don't play a ton. I'm just a little worried about his
Well,
lack of playing here.
okay, so a couple things. For the record, this deal would save about 12 million for the Boston
Absolutely.
books. Should have
I
mentioned
love
that.
that.
So that is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Any trade with Drew is going to save you money. Any trade that I'm going to say, at least.
Yeah.
But in terms of Gafford playing, like, I think Mazzulla and any NBA coach schemes around their roster. And if Gafford is on the roster, I think you change the scheme.
Sure.
And, remember Robert Williams on the Celtics, how great that looked. I think it would look similar to that. So,
Sure.
all right, let's go to the next one, though. Let's say, for whatever reason, Dallas says no to that deal, or maybe Brad Stevens doesn't like my hypothetical. Another one I have, Drew to the Clippers, Chris Dunn, Derek Jones Jr., and Drew Eubanks to Boston. And then again, for the contracts, Bogdanovich and a second would go to Brooklyn. This also saves about $12 million. So the Clippers end up with Drew upgrading that Dunn, Derek Jones Jr. spot. Boston ends up with those two defenders and Eubanks. Again, Boston fans, you're not going to be blown away here, but this does save us money and it does get us a
I
couple
love
good
this one.
players.
I would be very excited. I freaking love this one. This one is my favorite. I love Derrick Jones Jr. and Chris Dunn. I like Eubanks. He's probably not going to play very much, but I love this trade for us. It saves us great money, and I love bringing in those two wing guys that fit what we like to do here, where it's like very toolsy wing defenders, but also people that can score as well. Now, granted, they're both streaky shooters, but I've always really loved Dunn and Derrick Jones Jr. as prospects. So to get them on the team, I'm happy with this one. I really like this trade.
Yeah, I like it. I like the Gafford one better just because, like, Dunn and Derrick Jones Jr., we saw the limitations this year in the playoffs,
Absolutely.
especially with Dunn. Like, if you're a guard and you can't shoot, it really, really hurts you, regardless of how awesome he is on defense. Like, I think that defense in the regular season would be awesome. Obviously, even if they, get to the playoffs, like, the playoff defense would be good too, but it's just like, oh, that kills the offense. That's the part where it's like you think about Mazzulla playing these guys and it's like, can you even scheme around like a guard not being able to shoot and a forward not being able to shoot at all? So I like it too. I would do that. Saves money, helps us get under the apron. Again, like the Drew trade is going to be the big one. It's going to be the one that like gets us the players that are going to play with Tatum when he returns. So this is kind of what we're looking at with sending off Drew. Let's look at one more to send Drew to Orlando, which there's been a lot of rumors about Drew to Orlando because of that defensive identity, because you can picture a defensive backcourt of Suggs and Drew together and just, wreaking havoc, as well as Orlando can't shoot. And like they brought in
Yeah.
KCP to shoot, he couldn't shoot. Drew obviously had a down shooting year, but he would walk on to Orlando and be maybe their best shooter, which is insane to
Yeah.
say because he was, not great this year shooting. But it would be Drew to Orlando. It would be KCP, Gary Harris, Corey Joseph, and probably some seconds to Brooklyn. And it would be Nick Claxton to Boston. This deal saves $7 million. I like it. Again, you're not going to get blown away, but Nick Claxton's a really good, he fits the timeline in terms of age. He's a good rim protector. He's a lob threat. Again, similar to that Robert Williams archetype. I like this deal too. I think I would do it if I'm
I
Boston.
agree. I like this deal. I think I would do it as well. I love the idea of Jrue Holiday. One, they need just an adult in the room in Orlando. That's what they brought KCP to be, and he just wasn't shooting the ball well enough for them. And the idea of what Jrue Holiday's mentorship can bring to like a young Anthony Black and Jalen Suggs just makes me very excited, because I think what you're hoping Jalen. Or excuse me, what you're hoping Anthony Black could be is like a 6'7" version of Jrue Holiday, where it's just like he's good at every aspect and he's just a great defender, and that just gets me like giddy. And that's really cool there. And then in terms of what they're getting back, like Claxton and saving money is just what you need, because I mean obviously they have great wings, but you need to shore up that defensive big lines there, and that's exactly what Claxton does for you. So I see why every team in this does that move. I mean, for Brooklyn, it just makes you worse. I don't, I and you get picks, but like
Yeah,
at this
Brooklyn would
point,
need picks. That's it.
yeah, that's really why I would do it. And also, I just love like they need a point guard in Orlando, so Drew can absolutely kind of run
Yeah.
the offense there and
You would definitely see Drew
basket shooting.
in a bit more of a creation role. Obviously, he'd be off the ball a bunch because of his age, but yeah, he would definitely be running the show a little bit. And then
I
just
just want to say I
yeah.
don't want to trade Drew Holiday. I
You
know
don't want to trade Drew at all.
we have to, but I just as a Celtics fan, it hurts.
I mean, yeah, I agree. I don't want to trade Drew Holiday, but like we kind of have to.
I get it. I'm just putting it out there. I just don't want to do it. I have to
If
go to
you're
work
Brad
tomorrow.
Stevens,
I
would
don't
you
want to
trade
do
Drew
it.
Holiday?
Huh?
If you were Brad Stevens, would you trade Drew Holiday?
How many beers have I had?
Dead sober.
No. I don't know. I think it depends on like what. I trust Brad. I don't know.
But like would so you would rather the scenario where we just trade Porzingis, maybe Hauser, get under the apron that way and keep Drew for next year?
Yes, but I
I
don't.
don't
It's
agree
not
with
the right
that.
answer. It's not the right answer. What I'm saying is wrong. I want to preface it. What I am saying is incorrect. As a fan, I fucking love Drew Holiday. He's been one of my favorite players. I was so happy he was on my team. That's all.
Okay, fair enough.
This is fan Max speaking, not analyst Max.
Okay, that's fine. Just to preface why I said Brooklyn, it's because they have the most cap space in the league and they would basically facilitate any three-team deal because they can just take on whatever contract basically and you can throw in picks to reward them. All right, let's move on to Porzingis, and this is where like it gets really sad because Porzingis for the last month or so has completely tanked his value because of how he's played because of this weird illness and obviously the injury history on top of it. But the first one I came up to, what team needs a center, Max?
Sorry.
What team in the NBA would you say most is in need of a center?
The Los Angeles Lakers would be my guess.
Yes. So I sent KP to the Lakers.
Oh. Sorry. Did I do that? I didn't mean to do
And in return, Rui and Gabe would come back to Boston. This saves money, helps get under the apron. If the Lakers don't want to send Rui, as crazy as that sounds, if the Lakers are like, yeah, we think Rui's too good to include in a Porzingis deal, they could also include Dorian Finney-Smith. I think there's also a scenario where maybe if Brad wins the negotiations, maybe you can get Connect in the deal if you throw in like the 32nd pick this year or something like that. But yeah, it's not great. That is honestly one of the more optimistic options with Porzingis is getting Rui and Gabe back and saving money. So what do you think?
I mean, like basketball wise, it makes sense. I mean, it sucks to like get rid of your 7'3" unicorn that when he's hitting shots just looks insane. But we've watched enough of him. I don't see this getting better with age. We were texting the other night, and it's like you're scared of him injury wise all the time. Like regardless, like there's not a player since Robert Williams where every time he was in the air, I was just like, oh fuck, please don't hurt yourself. And then to add on like a mystery illness that they can't cure. So when he is healthy, like
Insane.
physically, he just is sick now. It's like, what are we doing? I mean, you gotta sell on him, unfortunately. But the problem is you probably can't. My guess is he's with the team until the trade deadline, and they kind of let him play himself back. And I mean, at that point, if he's playing well, maybe don't look to move him, but who knows? But yeah, this trade, I like this is a solid trade for the Celtics in terms of, getting off some of that salary. The Lakers get who they need, and they get in some pretty solid assets. I have a trade. Bill Simmons mentioned it in passing, and I thought it was really solid. It's just KP to the Jazz for John Collins. Saves you about $4 million. And Collins, I believe, is on like a, maybe I don't know if it's an expiring off the top. I think it's close though. John Collins, just a guy that's perennially been linked to the Celtics since back when he was in Atlanta. But I mean, in terms of like fit, I don't really care. It's more so like you're getting off the money and you're bringing in a pretty solid guy in Collins. I don't know necessarily why the Jazz would do it though, unless they're just trying to
Yeah,
get
that's what I
worse.
was just gonna counter with is like the Jazz would be like, all right,
It's
yeah, and
picks.
throw in a first. And it's
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
fuck, now we're attaching picks to Porzingis just to get John Collins. Like, I totally get it, but I just pulled it up. Porzingis shot 31% from the field in the playoffs. So it's also like you don't have a ton of negotiating power here
Oh,
when you're
I get it.
trying to sell
Yeah,
off
I'm with you.
Porzingis. I
I'm
did
with
see
you.
one from Nick NBA, who I follow on Twitter, he covers the Celtics. I think he's in like it's called Celtics Film School or whatever, and he I don't know, he makes YouTube videos too. So he had a trade where it's KP and a lottery protected first to the Jazz, which brings back Colin Sexton, and he had KJ Martin coming back to Boston. It would also work with Taylor Hendricks instead of Martin. I really like this one. I almost think it's kind of unrealistic to get a player as good as
Good.
Sexton, but man, would that make me happy.
I totally agree. Plus, I love Hendricks. Like he had that horrible, horrific leg break this season at the start of the season, and that's kind of where he's been. But he was, I believe he was at a UCF, I think, or
I don't
was
even
that?
remember him from college, honestly.
I always get him mixed up with Jairus Walker. I believe Jairus Walker went to Houston, and Taylor Hendricks went to UCF. Yeah, he did go to UCF. Hendricks is like. He was a high draft pick for the Jazz, and he just kind of never really panned out. There's just a lot of mouths to feed on that team. And then when he did start playing well, he horrifically snapped his leg in half. I like getting him to Boston, just kind of giving him, I mean, in a season where we're going to be really bad, just kind of giving him some run and seeing what he pans out to be. But also just the idea of getting Sexton, like you and I love Sexton. I think I would love to see him in meaningful basketball games. You talk about this team being kind of soft and not having this edge. That is. Something that Sexton will fucking he'll fix that for sure. So I love that pick. I love that trade. I mean,
I love it
I don't
so
think it's
much.
very,
I love it
I
for
don't know if that
Sexton.
happens
I
though.
no, I don't know. Like the Jazz don't need Sexton. So if we give them a first,
They
like
don't
they're
need, they have Kessler and John
no, they don't need
Collins and
Porzingis at all. I'm not saying that. But if they get a pick, if they get a good pick, I don't
True.
know. Like maybe, Nick NBA had the protection on the first. Like, would you do this unprotected? I kind of would. Like, I kind of think Sexton might be exactly what you want coming back for,
Which
Tatum.
first is it? Did he say?
It's the 2026, so it's gonna be, a good pick if we're a 40-win team.
Yeah, I don't know. I get. Yeah, I think you still do it.
But
But
theoretically, the reason I love Sexton so much is for everything that Pritchard has become, which is, kind of beyond what a lot of people thought, winning Sixth Man of the Year, being a really good rotation piece. I don't know if you want him as your full-time starting point guard, or if he's, quite proven enough that he can hang defensively and really step into that role. Obviously, next season is a big season for Pritchard, and we'll see if he can become that. But if you get Sexton in the building, like you don't even have that worry anymore. You can just keep Pritchard in his role, and then have a lineup of Sexton, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and whoever the center is with Pritchard off the bench. That is just really, really exciting for the 27 season when Tatum returns. I love Colin Sexton, if you couldn't tell. So those are the optimistic trades. The not optimistic trades would just be straight salary dumps. There's a KP to the Bulls scenario where you just take back Jalen Smith, Javon Carter, and a couple salaries, saves you $9 million, and you're just basically losing the asset to save money. There's a KP to the Hawks scenario. You could bring back Terrence Mann and George Niang, save about $7 million.
Austin
Maybe,
guy, local guy,
yeah.
Bethuen, I believe.
Also, in both of these deals, like you can reroute the guys that you're getting back to save more salary. You can also trade to Brooklyn, like I said, because they can just take any contract and just do a straight salary dump, attach picks, send KP to Brooklyn. Maybe you take back like a tiny salary. And literally, if you do that, like that Porzingis trade could get you under the second apron all by itself, which would be helpful, of course. The thing with KP for me that I want to bring up is maybe this is the guy you don't trade, right? His value is so low. If those optimistic trades that we talked about, if those other teams aren't willing to do them, if the only option is to dump the salary and lose a borderline all-star player for nothing, like maybe you just keep him. Maybe you get under the apron with Drew and with Hauser trades, and maybe this illness goes away. He plays great next season. Maybe you re-sign him for when Tatum comes back, or maybe, like you said, if he's playing well during the season, maybe you can ship him off before the trade deadline. So I think there is a world where it's smarter to keep KP rather than trade him. It just totally depends on what deals are out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. Like, there's, I think if it's not a, he hurt his value too much. I don't know what team is like in the market for what, like an injured, sickly center
Do you
that is.
think realistically, if Brad offers Porzingis to the Lakers for Rui and Gabe in return, do you think the Lakers say no?
Do I think the Lakers say no? For Rui and Gabe, that's it?
Yeah.
No, I don't think they. I think they say yes.
You think they do it? So, I mean, that would be a decent move to me, is to save money and bring back a real, starting level player in Rui. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know if the Lakers say yes to that. Like, KP really damaged his.
Yeah, I get. Well, I guess it would have to be like what the other offers are. Like what other center could they
If
get?
they could get another center, right?
Yeah, if they can get someone else, I mean, you're probably going there, but the market, like, this is not a good free agency class, and I just don't think the center availability there is open. I mean, I don't know who you're bringing in to fill up that hole effectively. So I get, yeah, I think they say yes, but it depends. Let's go to Hauser. So to me, I do think there's potential where Drew and KP don't get moved. I think Hauser's gone. Like he's gonna basically his contract jumps up to 10 million after this year. It's just way too expensive to keep him on the books, especially where he had some injury issues and he just wasn't useful for us in the playoffs. I think
He
he
was when
gets
he played,
moved.
honestly. When he came back,
When he played, yes, but
he had that good game five, I think.
he's just too expensive for us right now. And when you're going to the finals, he's an embarrassment of riches. But right now, when you're trying to be smart and cut the fat, he's unfortunately part of the fat. So, you have Hauser Detroit for picks, just cut 10 million, 10 million salary. I like that move. I think like it's something that Detroit probably looks at, especially with who they have. Are you really expecting what's his face to shoot like he did last
Well,
year?
so
And
that's why I had this. So the trade is just straight up Hauser to Detroit. The Celtics get no players back, but they get maybe a second rounder, maybe it's 2 second rounders, and they just cut that salary. But the reason I had that is because both Beasley and Tim Hardaway are free agents. And
yeah,
it's
they're
like, if
yeah.
they test the market, Beasley could get a bag.
He probably will.
Tim Hardaway, like, I'm sure those guys want to go back to Detroit, but it just sometimes happens where the money doesn't work. And we've seen, like, it is so valuable to have shooters around Cade now that I think Hauser would be a really good fit there. And if you can just cut salary like that and get a couple seconds back, I think that's a really good way to do it. I also wonder if Schroeder re-signs with Detroit. Does Marcus Sasser have a ton of value there? Maybe we get a good, decent, young player back in the deal and a low salary as well.
Absolutely. And then you had Hauser to Golden State, Moody to Brooklyn, Jalen Wilson and a second rounder from the Warriors to Boston. Same thing, just cutting salary and getting an asset back in Jalen Wilson, who's someone that I think we both like Jalen Wilson. So definitely someone that can play. So yeah, I think that is those are kind of the Hauser trades. The trades are gonna be something like that. Now, we do have one like Jalen, I don't want Jalen Brown to be traded. I'm just gonna say it right now. I just don't want that to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. And the one trade that I saw for him, and I think this is just insane, but it's JB to the Nets for Cam Thomas, Noah Clowney, the number 8 and a 2027 first and a 2031 first. I don't see why
Yeah.
the Nets do that. I don't get it.
You don't see why the Nets do it? Yeah, I guess so. I guess it doesn't make sense
Why
for
would
either.
they?
I was gonna say, like, I don't want to do that either.
I
I don't
won't
want
do it, but
Cam
I don't see why
Thomas
the.
and Clowney back.
Yeah. I mean, like, number 8 pick in this year's draft. I mean, this is a solid draft, but I mean, I just don't like this trade. Why would the Nets do that? That hurts your asset pack, unless they're trying to like gear up for Giannis. But I just don't get them bringing in a good player right now.
Yeah, totally fair. There was like a Jalen to Ja or Jalen to Memphis for Ja
No
rumor.
thanks. How
Yeah,
about
no thanks
that?
on that for me as well. I don't think Jalen gets traded. I
I
really
hope
hope he
not.
doesn't get traded. There is a world where he gets traded for sure. That's why we're mentioning it.
He's
But
probably getting traded, but
I don't think he
no,
is. I don't think he is.
I don't think he
I
is either.
honestly think all three of Drew, KP, and Hauser are gone. I do want to give our people some optimism. Here is the most optimistic roster that Jason Tatum could return to in the 26-27 season. So it would be Colin Sexton at the point guard. It would be White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Daniel Gafford, with a bench of Pritchard, Cornette, Vincent, Shireman, Hardy. That would make me so happy. That would make me so happy if Tatum comes back to a team like that. Another optimistic outcome would be a lineup of Pritchard, White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Daniel Gafford, with a bench of Rui, Hardy, Cornette, Vincent, maybe Jalen Wilson if the Nets decide to put him in that deal. Here's the nobody wants our players outcome, where we just basically salary dump guys and we don't get anything for these assets this offseason, then you're looking at a roster of Pritchard, White, JB, JT, Cornette, with a bench of Gabe Vincent, Jalen Smith, Shireman, like whoever fills in the bench. And it gets really ugly. Now, there is also Derek White scenarios, which I think are
Oh
real.
no. Please, please no. Please no.
I mean, if you talk about getting assets back to reset, like Derek White has a ton of value right now and could really set us up for the future, especially like if you want to argue his age isn't the best for, Tatum's return. I think he's going to be 32 when Tatum gets back, so it's like, is it smart to trade Derek White right now and just cash in on one of your most valuable assets outside of Tatum and Brown? Like, maybe it is. I didn't include Derek White trades because there just isn't a whole lot of momentum for it right now because of how good he is and because the Celtics are just expected to keep him. But it does warrant some discussion that he might be gone as well.
It does. It hurts so bad. I don't want to see him gone. It hurts. But yeah, that's a tough one.
You didn't like our
So
optimistic version. I saw your face. What the? You wouldn't be happy at a Sexton and Gafford
no, I just
starting
got
lineup?
sad. No, I loved this. This is my all-time, the team that we had last year is my all-time favorite team. So
Well, yeah, me
that's
too.
just, that's all that was. You're right. Like, Pritchard, White, JB, JT, Gafford, Rui, Hardy, Cornette, Vincent. A little small, but I love the it's just sad. Like, we had two like switch bigs. Like, it's just, yeah, we just not
Yeah,
gonna have that
Horford
anymore.
also, I'm
Yeah,
not
Horford
expecting
being
him to
gone.
be at a playoff contributing level when Tatum returns. I think he'll, play limitedly next season and
Yeah.
maybe stays on the roster as a bench guy, as a locker room guy when Tatum comes back. But he honestly looked old in this year's playoffs. I think at best, like, you could have hoped for a decent playoff run out of him next year, but the year after that, it just,
Tough. It's tough. I my face was just because it's we're coming we're it, the to win finals, it's the championship window, and our window just closed for a year, and it could stay closed, or we
it could
could
be
kind of,
closed for multiple, for sure.
yeah, we could definitely, we're not very far from going all the way back to 2015 again and having to start.
That
So
I
it's just,
don't agree with. We still have
I
Tatum and
know,
Brown.
I'm yeah, you're right, you're right, we still have Tatum and Brown. It's just the idea, like, if Tatum comes back to that team and he's like 90% of Tatum, and it's just like, oh
Yeah, then
fuck.
they're a second round exit again.
Yeah, and it's just perennial second round exits, and then you just kind of start from scratch and you bunker down and wait for Cooper Flagg to come. So you'll be there. You'll get here eventually.
Yeah,
I
I
feel it
mean,
in my bones.
if Nico stays in that position, I think Cooper Flagg should be a Celtic one day.
Sure. Okay, anything else on the Celtics team? Or no, I don't.
My final words, okay? Celtics
Yeah.
fans, this was worst case scenario this year, 100%. But this offseason could be exciting. It's going to be sad to see Drew go if he goes. It's going to be sad to see KP and Hauser go if they go. But Brad Stevens is an amazing GM. He also has picks to deal with. Like, the Celtics have some real ammo to retool here. Next season is kind of lost, but you got to believe in Brad over two off seasons before Tatum comes back to retool this thing and get it back to where it needs to be. So I have some optimism.
Yeah, I feel better. I feel better already. Yeah, I think around the NBA, though, I think this is going to be a very tumultuous summer and trade deadline. So I'm excited for
I think
that
we're going to
aspect of
see
it.
some craziness this offseason.
I think the draft is going to be fucking wild. Like, I don't even know. Like, could you? I'm not opposed to the Celtics trading up and getting a pick in this draft somehow.
Yeah,
And
they could
because
do that
these are
too.
good, solid role players that can come in and contribute like pretty much right away, and you take a year to just, I think this year is about developing your young guys and Shireman and Walsh and Davison. Well, I don't know if he will be on the books anymore, but just kind of it, you
Pritchard,
know,
really. It's a big
Pritchard,
Pritchard
yeah.
year. Can you take a
Seriously.
leap? Can you show that you're our starting point guard?
And I just really want us to get a young big and actually give him the opportunity to develop, because clearly we need someone to take the Al Horford role once he moves on. And clearly we saw it, like, Cornette minutes, they're fun when they're unexpected and he plays extremely well. Cornette is not a starting center in the league. I'm sorry.
No,
It's
he's
just
a
not.
good rotational regular season
Exactly.
big, and
Exactly.
that's maybe it.
So we need a good big to come in that's young to kind of create like our new backup for the next generation. So I would like to see them. I know number 28 could be a pretty important pick. I would like to see them go and not take a project player and to take someone that's more NBA ready and someone that can kind of contribute right away. And I'm hoping it's a big. So yeah, there's gonna be some moves. I mean, there's no other way to say it. We got it sucks. Injuries suck. It sucks that Tatum was probably the most durable star, and for him to just go down in such a way, it's just such a blow, man. I don't think there's any other way to put it. So, but not to end on a down note, this was a good episode. We love you all. We thank you for listening. We'll be back on Sundays as per usual, kind of recapping some of the games that we'll have seen. If you're on YouTube, please like and leave a comment and subscribe if you can. For Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, Deezer, or any other podcast or any other platform that you're listening to this podcast, please leave a 5-star review and recommend this to your friends. It helps us out so much. Check out Jordan's TikTok in the description as always. Click the link tree in our description. It's got everything there. Thank you all for listening. We love you all and peace.